Good morning, everybody. Those of you who live in Yerushalayim were zeichet to a Purim Mishulash, and those outside perhaps only had one day, but hopefully it was still something that was very elevating. It's Yadua, the teaching of the Arizal, that Yom Kippur is called Yom Kippurim, which could actually be read that Yom Kippur is a day comparable to Purim, but not quite as great as Purim. Purim can even be greater because Yom Kippur, we sanctify God by rejecting the world. And that is a very high level of separating from the world, but that is not sustainable. That is not the way you can live your life every day. Purim, we bedafka connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by very, very physical things, eating and drinking and rejoicing. And that could even be a higher level, because that is something that is sustainable every single day of the year. So B'ezrat Hashem, may the Simcha of Purim permeate our whole year and lead to the Geula and Yeshua of Pesach. We know there is a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, Shayolin v'darshin v'hilchais Pesach, kaidim l'Pesach shloshim yom. One is supposed to learn and investigate the laws of Pesach 30 days before Pesach. The laws of Pesach are very long and complicated, and one should start learning them at least 30 days before Pesach. And it's interesting that 30 days before Pesach is Purim. I don't want to scare people about cleaning up for their houses and the like. And it's brought down that one of the things you should do on Purim is to begin Hilchos Pesach. Now, it's interesting that the very first halacha in the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Pesach is this, Shayolin V'darshin B'Hilchais Pesach Kaidim L'Pesach Shloshim Yom. So I heard a story once. Again, it's a very interesting story that Rav Yashiv for many, many years used to learn in an old, almost abandoned shul in Mei Yesharim called Oel Sora. It's still around. You can actually walk by it and Shiftei Yisrael, and you can see a shul called Oel Sora. And that was his private place because nobody was there during the day except for davening. So he had a key and he let himself in. He locked the door and nobody was able to disturb him. And Rav Yashiv, when he was learning, and it was not during times of Kabbalat Kahal, he would not answer the door. People would knock at the window. People would scream. People would yell. And he basically had a shita that he would not respond. And even when people will tell him later was pikuach nefesh, his answer was, for pikuach nefesh, you call a doctor or a hospital. You don't have to talk to me. Okay, this was his particular shita. So one time he was learning and his back was to the window. And somebody just wanted to watch him learn and what he was learning. And he noticed that Rav Yashiv was learning Shulchan Aruch and he didn't turn the page for 3 hours. And the page that he was learning had only one halacha on it with many commentaries that Shayolin V'darshin, you're supposed to learn Hilchos Pesach for 30 days. Now he wondered, what did Rav Yashiv spend 3 hours in that particular halacha? That would be a halacha that we would cover in, 30 seconds. We would read it and turn the page. And yet, even a very, very simple statement, a gadol like Rav Yashiv saw infinite subtleties and questions and eon. And the person says, I don't know how you could spend 3 hours in analyzing that particular halacha. And I am the same way. I don't know what you can do, but this gadol was able to spend 3 hours just on that one sentence, Shayolin V'darshin B'Hilchos Pesach. They say similarly, Rav Yeshua Leib Diskin, the great Maril Diskin, was the Rav of Brisk, and then he came to Yerushalayim towards the end of his life. He was never the Rav of Yerushalayim, but he was considered to be the gadol of Yerushalayim. Rav Yeshua Leib Diskin used to give a shir in Gemara, Motzei Shabbos, for 4 or 5 hours. And only the most advanced Talmidei Chachamim could even understand his shir. And they once spent 6 months on a single line of a Tosfos. 6 months. And finally, after 6 months, they finally made a siyum, not on a maseches, but only on a single line. And they felt very happy because they figured, oh, Baruch Hashem, we understand this line. This line we really, really. And he noticed that people were very happy with themselves. And Vishulev Diskin says, do you think that after 6 months, you understand this line? We don't understand anything, but we have to go on. Eventually, we have to go on. In Torah, every single idea can be explored and explored and explored because the Torah is God's will and God is infinite. And therefore, every chelek of the Torah is infinite. But be it as it may, Lamaisa, we were Makayim this halacha because we were learning about many inyanim of Pesach well before Purim, and we are going to continue now as well. So we are actually doing the inyan of Hilchos Pesach, maybe not halacha Lamaisa, but certain halachic inyanim connected to Pesach. We're doing it behidur mitzvah because we started even before Purim, and we're certainly going to be mamshech afterwards. So what I want to talk about today is to continue our discussion of the mitzvah of matzah. You'll recall that there are three things that you're supposed to eat, Leil Seder, and one thing that you're supposed to drink. There's a mitzvah d'rabanan of 4 cups of wine. That's a d'rabanan. And then the three mitzvahs of food are Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. The eating of the Korban Pesach, the eating of matzah, and the eating of maror, right? These are all three in the Torah, but their present status today will differ between them. And that is, obviously, the eating of the Korban Pesach is shayach only when you have a Beis HaMikdash, and we bring korbanos. So bizman hazeh litzareinu, we do not have the mitzvah of eating the Korban Pesach. We have the shank bone, we have the zeruah, we have a piece of roasted meat or chicken to commemorate the Korban Pesach. But the meaning of Ashkenazim is we do not eat roasted meat at the Seder, only boiled meat or fried, because we don't want to confuse ourselves or confuse people that we're actually eating the Korban Pesach. Because eating a korban when there's no Beis HaMikdash is an issur d'oraisa. So Korban Pesach, we don't have at all. Now, eating the maror, which of course we do have, whether you use horseradish or lettuce, we do have, and we make a bracha al achilas maror, but one has to understand that maror bisman hazeh is only a rabbinic law. It is not d'oraisa. And the reason for that is that the only reference to maror in the Torah is in connection with the Korban Pesach, al matzos umarorim yochluhu, you shall eat the Korban Pesach with matzah and maror. In other words, the maror was considered to be an appendage to the Korban Pesach, and memela, we paskin, that when there is no Korban Pesach, there is the oraisa, no chiyuv of maror. So maror bizman hazeh is only a chiyuv d'rabanan as a zecher l'korban pesach. And even though we do make the bracha asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav, that God has commanded us to eat maror, even though God has not commanded us to eat maror without a korban pesach, but that's not a kasha, because the truth of the matter is every mitzvah that's derabanan has the language asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav. Consider Hanukkah candles. Consider Megillah reading. These are all derabanans. These are not the oraisas. And yet we Shabbos candles, lighting Shabbos candles, is not a d'oraisa. And yet we all make the bracha asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav. Because as the Rambam explains, right, the Rambam explains that since the Torah says you are supposed to listen to the Chachamim, so when the Chachamim command me to do something, Hashem commanded me to do it in the indirect way of mitzvah lishmoa ledivrei Chachamim. So Pesach, we don't eat at all. Maror is midrabanan. So the only Dalet Kosos is midrabanan. So the only mitzvah of achila that is the araisa is the mitzvah of eating a kezias of matzah leil seder, because even though the pasuk al matzos umarorim yochluhu, which connects maror to korban pesach, also connects matzah to korban pesach. So if you only had that pasuk, you would have said matzah too is midrabanan. But matzah has a separate pasuk that delinks it from Karban Pesach, and that is the pasuk Bo'erev Teichlu Matzos, that the night you shall eat matzah. And in that pasuk, Karban Pesach is not mentioned, and therefore that is the makor that matzah bisman hazeh is a chiyuv Di Raisa. Okay, so matzah's di Raisa, moror jirabanan, dalit kosos jirabanan, korban pesach, we do not eat at all. That's kind of a summary of the mitzvot of achila at the Seder. Now, what is the reason why the Torah gives us a mitzvah of matzah? And by extension, why is there an issur of chametz? Because we have both things to consider. The chiyuv of matzah is only leil seder. The issur of chametz, of course, is all 7 days of Pesach and including part of Erev Pesach as well. So in reality, both the Haggadah and the Torah itself give two different reasons for the issur, for the chiyuv of matzah. The Haggadah begins with a paragraph after Kiddush, the beginning of Magid, Ha lachma anya diachalu afhasana bi'ara dimitzrayim. Right? We look at the matzah and we say, this is the bread of affliction, lechem oni, that our forefathers ate in Egypt. And lachma anya is simply Aramaic for the words lechem oni. And the words lechem oni appear in the Torah itself, the bread of poverty, the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate in Egypt. So the Mefarshim explain that when the Jews were slaves, the Egyptians used to feed them unleavened bread that we would call matzah. And the reason is that unleavened bread stays in your digestive system a very long time. And as a result, you don't have to eat so much. So if I'm a person who's trying to save on food, like a slave owner, I will stuff my slaves with matzah because that stays in their gut, that stays in their stomach. I think we've experienced this. And as a result, I save on my food bills. So seen in this way, lechem oni is a commemoration of slavery and servitude. Similar to Maror. Maror reminds us of the bitterness of slavery. And matzah also reminds us of slavery and persecution. That is the idea of lechem oni. By the way, the Gemara has a double entendre here. Lechem oni means the bread of affliction or the bread of poverty. Indeed. But lechem oni can also come from onin, to answer or recite, lechem sha'onin alav devarim harbei, that the Haggadah should be recited over matzah. That is actually the source of the idea that when you recite the Magid, the matzah should be uncovered and exposed and in front of you, because that is the second meaning of lechem oni, that it is the lechem sha'onin alav devorim harbe. And there is a third connotation to the idea of lechem oni, and that is just like a poor person will eat a piece of bread, because a poor person, all like in the Holocaust, we remember people would save pieces of their bread because they didn't know how much they would get the next day, as opposed to a wealthy person who doesn't really care that much about leftover pieces of bread. They might be thrown away or discarded or fed to animals. But an ani saves pieces of bread. So that teaches me that when the Haggadah is recited, it should be over a broken piece of matzah. And that is the basis of the ceremony that is called yachatz, where you split the matzah, because that is a fulfillment of lechem oni. So lechem oni means bread of poverty, both because that was fed to slaves, and that's why our matzah is broken. And it's lechem sha'onin Allah devarim harbe, that the Haggadah should be recited over the lechem oni. So that understanding of matzah connects matzah to a reenactment and a re-experience of slavery and deprivation. That is reason number one for matzah. Reason number two for matzah is exactly the opposite. Lo hispik b'tseikam shel aviseinu lahachmitz. There was no time to let the dough of our forefathers rise. Now, what is that describing? That the morning of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we were baking bread for the trip, and we were planning that first Pesach. We were planning to let the dough rise and become chametz, and then we would bake it like regular bread. But what happened was the Egyptians said, get out, get out, get out. Or Hashem said, get out, get out, get out. Again, the pashas of the Torah is the Egyptians were kicking us out. The Arizal learns Hashem said we had to go because we are in the 49th level of impurity. And had we stayed another few minutes, we would have become level 50. We would have been irredeemable. So as a result, we had to bake our bread prematurely. We had to take it before the dough had risen, before it had adequately fermented it. And we had to bake it as unfermented, unrisen dough. And that's what it means. Lehispik b'tseikam shel aveseinu lahachmitz. And as a remembrance of the chipazon, as a remembrance of the hurriedness, the alacrity by which we had to leave Mitzrayim, so we eat matzah to remember that chipazon. That's why we also don't eat chametz for all 7 days. That's a zecher l'chipazon. So it turns out that these are actually opposite symbolic meanings of matzah. There is the matzah that's a zecher li'abdus, which is lechem oni. And there is the matzah that's a zecher li'ge'ula of lehispik b'tseikam shel aviseinu lahachmitz. By the way, the story here is not at all clear. Please pay attention to the way I describe the story, because some might describe the story in a different way. I describe the story that the morning of Pesach, they were planning on baking chametz tikka bread, but either the Egyptians or Hashem said, you have to leave now. So we baked the dough before it had adequately risen, and we left Mitzrayim with baked matzah, which had not had time to become chametz. That is one way the story is understood. There is, however, a different way of understanding the story, that the chipazon was so rapid that we didn't even have time to bake our dough, and we left Mitzrayim with dough on our shoulders that we had to bake on the path. According to that, the chipazon is a little different. Instead of the chipazon, we didn't have time to let our dough rise. The chipazon actually means we didn't have time to let our dough be baked. I'll talk about that later. But for now, I want to go with, I think, the more common understanding, although the lesson of the pasuk is much more the second way, that we did bake our bread in Mitzrayim before we left, but we didn't have time to let the dough rise and ferment. Now, again, let me point out that the process that is called chimutz, fermentation of grain, does not require yeast, and it does not require a starter. That may accelerate or improve the process, But according to halacha, halachic fermentation occurs if you simply have flour and water, and if that remains without being worked on for a period of 18 minutes, even if it doesn't look that fermented, halachically, that is defined as chimutz, and that becomes chametz. Now, if the dough is being worked, that's not the case. But if the dough is left with the flour and the water, so again, it's important to understand that although in modern baking, if you're trying to get a dough to rise, you may put in yeast or sourdough or starter, none of that is necessary for the halachic definition of chametz. Chametz will happen at the 18 minute point. Okay, so it turns out that the Haggadah itself encapsulates these two reasons, because at the beginning of the Haggadah, we emphasize the matzah of slavery, chol lachma anya, and then at the end of Magid, right before the second cup, when we quote Rabban Gamliel that says, anybody who doesn't explain the three halachas of Pesach, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, lo yatsa yedei chavatso, he has not fulfilled his obligation. And then he goes on and explains matzah, and you'll see, lo hispik b'tzeikam shel avoseinu lahachmitz, the dough of our forefathers did not have time to rise until HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, we have to leave. Okay, so there is the matzah of galus, the matzah of slavery, and then there is the matzah of freedom, and therefore matzah is a double symbol. Now, based on this, though, there's a big, big kasha that the Rishonim ask. In Perek Yud Beis of Shmos, which is a collection of mitzvos that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, 2 weeks before Pesach, right? Or 15 days before Pesach. HaChodesh is Elohim, that Nisan is the first of the months and the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. There was a whole variety of laws concerning the Korban Pesach. But you have to bring the Korban Pesach. And there was a prohibition to have chametz and to eat chametz. And there was a chiyuv of eating matzah. So here's the kasha. The Jewish people were already told they were not allowed to have chametz 2 weeks before Pesach. So the morning of Pesach, when we're baking our bread, we don't have the option to let it rise. And the reason it didn't rise is because we were told to leave. Let's imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have said, you have all day, you don't have to go at all till tomorrow. We still would have had to bake our bread matzah. So how can you possibly say, the reason I eat matzah and don't eat chametz is because there was no time to let our dough rise and to remember the fact that we left b'chipazayim and we had to bake our dough in an unfermented state. That is why I eat matzah and don't eat chametz. Even if I was not under a rush, I was already commanded not to eat chametz. So I had to bake my bread in a state of matzah. In other words, chipazayin cannot possibly be the reason. Now again, let me point out that I'm not simply asking the kasha, oh, how could chipazayin be a reason because the mitzvah was given before the event? The fact that a mitzvah is given before an event is not so much of a kasha, because God knows the future. I mean, after all, the Korban Pesach was given before the event of Makas Becharos. God is simply saying, bring a Korban Pesach to commemorate the fact that I will pass over the houses that have that blood on the doorpost, and I will spare the firstborn of Israel. So giving a mitzvah in advance of a reason that didn't happen yet is not a question. Hashem can always give us a mitzvah ahead of time. But the question is more complicated than that. The fact that we had the mitzvah ahead of time makes the reason irrelevant. You can't say that the reason I don't chametz is because I had to rush out of Mitzrayim. That's not emes. Because even if I didn't have to rush out of Mitzrayim, it would have to have been matzah because of that earlier command. And if that's the case, therefore, eating the matzah in no way is connected to chipazim. Right? So how do we even understand the story? So here is what the Ran says in Arvei Pesachim. The Ran says in Arvei Pesachim, and again, it's based on a sugya in the Gemara, that there is a chiluk halachically between the first Pesach that was in Mitzrayim, right? That very first Pesach in Mitzrayim versus every Pesach that will be in the future. And that is, the first Pesach of Mitzrayim, there was an isser of eating chametz only on day one. Day one meaning on the 15th of Nisan. Day two, you were allowed to eat chametz, meaning there was no isser of chametz for 7 days. The isser of eating chametz was only on day one. That's one difference. A second difference was that in Pesach Mitzrayim, there was only an isser to eat chametz. There was no isser to own chametz or have it in your possession. That too did not kick in until year two and did not apply in year one. So there are two nafkaminas, there are two differences between Pesach Mitzrayim, which is year one, and Pesach Dorot, the Pesach of the future generations, that started in year two. Number one, year one, the Isser of Chametz is only day one and not the other days. Year two, the Isser of Chametz will be for 7 days. That's difference number one. Difference number two, in year one, the Isser was only Achila, not ownership. Year two, the Isser is going to be ownership as well, and that is the negative commandment, Lo Yeira'ev, Lo Yimatzeh, or we commonly call it Bal Yeira'ev, Bal Yimatzeh, that not only are you not allowed to eat chametz, you're not even allowed to own chametz, and that's why you either have to burn it or sell it to a guy, because you're not allowed to own chametz during Pesach. Nemela, based on these hakdamos, which are based on a sugya in the ninth parak of Pesachim, we can understand the story. The morning of Pesach, they were indeed permitted to bake chametz stick of bread, not to eat that day, but they were baking, they would have baked chametz stick of bread to be able to eat the next day because they were going on a trip and they were making food for more than 1 day. So had there not been chipazayin, had there only been the original commandments of not eating chametz, that would have meant we would have made chametz stick of bread, which we're allowed to own for consumption on day two and afterwards. But because there was no time to let our dough rise and we had to leave Mitzrayim b'chipazayin, God enacted as a commemoration of that event, we're not allowed to even own chametz, and the isser of chametz was extended for 7 days. Right? That is how the Ran understands lehispik b'tzeikam shel aveisenu lahachmetz. Now, what that means is the following. When we ate matzah at the first Seder, when we ate matzah at the first Seder, the only symbolism that matzah had was lechem oni. that we should remember always that we were slaves. The matzah of that first Seder could not have been a zecher to the chipazon of our leaving Mitzrayim, because that was an event that didn't happen until the next morning. Which means the idea that I started off with, that matzah is a double-symboled mitzvah, because it commemorates both Lechem Ayni and Chipazayim, that started only the second time we ate matzah in year number two, or maybe the rest of that Pesach. But year number one, when we ate matzah at the Seder, what were you thinking about? If you're eating matzah, right, you're about to go out of Mitzrayim, and you're eating matzah the first Seder, the first night, what is your thought? Your thought cannot be, oh, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim with such a rush that we didn't have time to let our dough rise. That didn't happen yet. And in fact, you didn't even know that that was going to happen. As far as you're concerned, tomorrow morning we'll get up early and we'll bake bread. You didn't know there would be such a rush that you wouldn't have time to let your bread bake. So this is an interesting point. The kavana of matzah shifted between year one and year two. In year one, it had a single kavana of lechem oni, and only in year two did it acquire a new kavana in addition to lechem oni of lahispik b'tzeikam shel avoseinu lahachmitz, because we were going to bake bread day one for consumption on day two, and we were not able to do so because either Hashem or the Egyptians were demanding that we leave b'chipazon. And as a zecher b'chipazon, whenever we eat matzah after that point, we remember that chipazon, the matzah as a symbol of gula. Okay, I hope this is clear, that matzah started off life as a single symbolic meaning, and then it acquired an additional symbolic meaning starting the next morning. And that didn't become activated as a mitzvah till the next year, because remember, that first Pesach, they actually were allowed to have chametz, to eat chametz on day two, and they were allowed to even own chametz on day one, even on day one. Okay. So that's the chiluk between Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Dorot, and that is based on the Ran. Now let me point out that if you look at Parshas Bo, Perek Yud Beis, you will have a kasha on this, because it does say over there, for 7 days you shall not eat chametz and you shall not own chametz. But if you look at the language of the Pesukim very carefully, you will see that that is only applying for the next year. It does not apply to that first year. So in effect, Hashem tell them that next year you can't eat chametz for 7 days, but he doesn't give them the reason. They don't know the reason. The reason will be discovered the next morning. In other words, for reasons you don't yet know, next year you're not going to be allowed to own chametz and you're not going to be allowed to eat chametz, but no reason was given, and it's only the next morning that they remember, they discover that the reason is because of chipazon. Okay, so it's a complicated story a little bit, but this is how the Ran reconstructs exactly what was going on. Now, we do know that the mitzvah d'oraisa of eating matzah and making the bracha al achilas matzah only applies Leil Seder. And there actually is no chiyuv other than the meals of Shabbos and Yom Tov, your general mitzvahs of meals. But there's no particular mitzvah to eat matzah the rest of Pesach. If you want to live on potatoes, that's going to be fine. The issur is eating chametz. And when the Torah says 7 days you shall eat matzah, that is not understood as a mitzvah to eat matzah, but rather you understand it this way: 7 days you're allowed to eat matzah, meaning you should not eat chametz, right? So the mitzvah is Leil Seder. The rest of the days, it is only a prohibition of chametz, but not a chiyuv for matzah. But it's also yodua that there's a famous psak of the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon says, Ein mikra yotzei midei peshutei, that you never take a pasuk out of its pashut pshat. And if the Torah does say, 7 days shall you eat matzah, the Vilna Gaon says that even though there is no chiyuv to eat matzah, there is a mitzvah in doing so, and every kezias of matzah that you eat is considered to be the fulfillment of a positive commandment. This is what is called a mitzvah kiyumit. There are two types of mitzvos. A mitzvah chiyuvit is a mitzvah that you must do. You don't have a choice. Eating matzah Leil Seder is a mitzvah chiyuvit. For men, putting on tefillin is a mitzvah chiyuvit. Reading Shema, etc. For men and women, making kiddush is a mitzvah chiyuvit. These are mitzvos you must do. However, there's another category of mitzvah in which if you don't do it, it's not an aveira. So it's not an obligation for you to do. But if you do it, Hashem considers it to be a mitzvah. You get reward for doing a virtuous activity. This is what is called a mitzvah kiyumit. And the Vilna Gaon says, eating matzah on Pesach, even after the Leil Seder, is called a mitzvah kiyumis. Now, you don't make a bracha on it. You don't make a bracha al achilas matzah. Now, according to the Vilna Gaon, it is generally assumed, although I'm not sure if you have 100% proof for this, that the same way that the chiyuv of matzah Leil Seder is not fulfilled by ordinary matzah, but you need what is called matzah shemura. So matzah shemura generally means, again, everything's a machlokas here, but it generally means that the matzah was harvested with the specific intention that it would be for the mitzvah of the Seder. And it was harvested with that kavana. It was then ground. It was then kneaded. Right, so there's a machlokas. I mean, today, virtually all matzah shemura is from the time of harvest. Other people were mekel; they didn't require shemira from the time of harvest. They said from the time of grinding would be enough. And yet a third opinion said from the time of kneading, making it a dough. But b'zman hazeh, I think every matzah shemura that is sold is called shemura bishas Kitsira, or Mishas Kitsira. Now, this is a special Gezeira Sakasa, that even if the matzah is 100% kosher lepesach, it's not chametz, if it was not prepared l'shem matzat mitzvah, you're not yotzei. That's why everyone has to have shmura matzah for the Seder. But the assumption is that according to the Vilna Gaon, kishem, that the mitzvah chiyuvit requires matzah shmura, hu hadin, the mitzvah kiyumit of the rest of the week also requires matzah shmura. And therefore, when you see people who are makbid, although it's somewhat expensive, to only eat matzah shmura kol yemot ha-pesach, it is probably because they are a chayshesh for the sheet of the Vilna Gaon, and they want to have a mitzvah for every kezias of matzah that they eat. So the mitzvah kiyumis of the gra would also require matzah shmura. Okay, so that's the basis of matzah shmura. Again, matzah shmura is not less. I'm sorry, is not more kosher per se than regular matzah. That's kosher with Pesach. But it was harvested with intention, l'shem mitzvah, and as a result, that is the only one that is suitable for the mitzvah of achilas matzah b'leil seder, because Chazal have a drasha, u'shemartem es ha-matzos, you shall watch the matzah, that requires there be shimor l'shma, that it be watched, it be guarded, it be prepared, specifically l'shem mitzvah. Okay, so that's the second point, right? So the first point was the two symbols of matzah, Geula lechemoni, which is avdus, and chipazayin, which is geula. The second point is the Vilna Gaon's expansion of the mitzvah of matzah to the whole week, with the difference of mitzvah chiyuvis versus mitzvah kiyumis. Now, as a little aside, let me just mention as an aside that it's yadua, and I think we've spoken about this other times, and I'm sure you've heard about it in many other shiurim, the famous machlekes, the Rambam and the Ramban, regarding Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, whether living in the land of Israel is a mitzvah or not a mitzvah. Ramban says, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah saseh min haTorah. There is a positive commandment to live in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam, although he talks about the great spiritual benefit of living in Eretz Yisrael, does not count it as a direct positive mitzvah, right? So according to the Ramban, there is a mitzvah to come to Eretz Yisrael and live here. According to Maimonides, according to the Rambam, the Pashtus, although there are different ways of learning the Rambam, there is no mitzvah. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where Rav Moshe asserts that even according to Ramban, even according to Nachmanides, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is only a mitzvah kiyumis. If you live here, you're fulfilling a mitzvah, but it's not a mitzvah chiyuvis, and therefore he defended the position of those who remained in Chutz La'aretz, even according to Ramban, meaning most people say, oh, if you live in Chutz La'aretz, you must be relying on the Rambam's shita. But Rav Moshe Feinstein claimed that even according to the Ramban, it was not in the nature of an obligation. It was only in the nature of a mitzvah that if you came, you're fulfilling a mitzvah, but there's no obligation, and therefore there's no sin if you fail to come. Again, our share is not about this topic. Maybe there'll be another time where we'll cover it. I just want to say that although all of us are absolutely dirt under the soles of Rav Moshe's feet, and there's no way we can approach his godless and his Torah knowledge and his Kedusha, I just have to say that if you look at the language of the Ramban in the Sefer HaMitzvos, which is a comment to the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, it's a Tzoruch Iyun Gadol Ma'od, because the Ramban's language is very, very emphatic that it is a chiyuv, it is an obligation, and not simply if you want to do it, it's a nice thing, it's a mitzvah, but rather it is a chiyuv. So if Rav Moshe wants to say that people who don't live in Eretz Yisrael are somech on the Rambam, okay, beseder, that's a mahalach, and many, many commentaries have said that. But to say that even the Ramban says it's not an obligation is very, very difficult. I honestly have no idea how Rav Moshe will be able to interpret the Ramban's language. But again, this is just a digression, nothing to do with our topic. The only reason I mention it is because once again, it makes the distinction between mitzvah kiyumis and mitzvah chiyumis. So now I want to talk about a third thing, and then I'm going to segue back. This will be connected. That is, let me talk about something that is called egg matzah, a product that is called egg matzah. Now, egg matzah simply means, right, standard matzah is made with flour and water. And that's it. It might be whole wheat flour. It could be oat flour, gluten-free flour. You can have different types of things. The flour of the matzah has to be from the five species of grain, which is wheat, 95% of matzahs are wheat. Wheat, oats, you can have oat matzah, which may be good for people with celiac disease. Spelt, rye, and barley. I've never had barley matzah, but I guess theoretically you could do it. A very interesting point about matzah, which is fascinating, and this is worthy of some thought. The only grains that are kosher for matzah are those things that are capable of becoming chametz. Because chametz and matzah correlate in that way. Because the only grains whose fermentation is halachically chametz are these very same five grains. So let's forget about kidneys for a moment. Under Torah law, you're allowed to have rice flour, and bean flour. Under Torah law, that's for sure. But your Sephardim are allowed to even today. And Ashkenazim have a chumra of kidneys. But under Torah law, rice and beans cannot become chametz. Buckwheat, even though the word wheat is in there, buckwheat cannot become chametz. Quinoa cannot become chametz. Okay, quinoa is machlokas, is it kosher lePesach or not because of kidneys? So you'd figure like this, hey, why can't I make rice matzah? Why can't I make quinoa matzah? Why can't I make buckwheat matzah? It's even better. It'll never be chametz. The halacha is no. The only things you can make matzah out of are those things that potentially could become chametz. Anything that cannot become chametz is not kosher for matzah. Now, historically, that makes perfect sense. Because when I look at the matzah, I'm supposed to remember we didn't have time to let our dough rise. The implication being that it would have risen had we had time. But something that halachically doesn't rise, even if you leave it for 5 hours, is no longer a commemoration of Chippuzah. In other words, in order for something to be a commemoration of Chippuzah, it has to be something that if you waited a little longer, would have risen. But if it's something that wouldn't have risen in a halachic sense, then it doesn't correlate to the fact that I was rushed out of Mitzrayim. Okay? So that's one thing to remember. Now, remember the very interesting idea that the only thing that can be matzah are the things that can be chametz. This was based on the Beis Halevi's, the Beis Halevi had a chumra, and I think some briskers still have it today, that he ate very little matzah during Pesach. He only ate the bare minimums of matzah because he maintained that matzah is the one product on Pesach that is most likely to have a risk of chametz. Matzah is like playing with nuclear fuel, uranium, because my potatoes aren't going to become chametz. My meat's not going to become chametz. My eggs are not going to become chametz. But what might be chametz? My matzah. Because matzah, you're handling stuff that in the baking might have become chametz. So as a result, his matzah was held to the bare minimum because of a cheshash of chametz, right? So that's the general rule about matzah, flour and water. So egg matzah is a product where in addition to flour and water, you add some type of additional ingredient. It might be egg yolk. It might be oil. It might be chocolate. It might be apple juice, or a combination thereof. So egg matzah tends to be sweet. Egg matzah tends to be soft. It's more chewable and the like. So what is the halacha of egg matzah? So here, let me mention what the Gemara says, then I'm gonna mention the chumras that come out of this. The only ruling that is definitive from the Gemara is you cannot use egg matzah at the Seder. Egg matzah is not valid for the mitzvah of matzah. Why is it not valid for the mitzvah of matzah? Because this is a correlation to lechem oni. Since matzah is described as the bread of poverty, the bread of slaves, right? The first reason for matzah, the bread that a poor person would eat, and lehepach, egg matzah is called matzah ashira, rich matzah. Therefore, matzah ashira cannot be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of lechem oni. Which means, as far as the Gemara is concerned, egg matzah is a kosher lePesach product. You could eat egg matzah during Pesach. The problem simply is that you cannot use it for Leil Seder. Now, this is the psak of Sfardim. Sfardim indeed, the Shoresh of Karu indeed say exactly this, that you cannot use matzah ashira at the Seder. Or, you know, actually, you can even use it at the Seder, but you can't use it for the mitzvah of matzah. But it's not chametz stick in any way. And it's absolutely kosher lePesach. And this, again, is the sheet of Rabbi Yosef Karo and is the sheet of many Sfardim. And that's why you will actually find in stores various cookies, cakes made with matzah meal and the like. And it'll say matzah ashira kasher livnei edut hamizrach. The Ramah, however, brings the minhag of Ashkenazim that not only is matzah ashira not valid for the Seder, but we don't eat matzah ashira at all during Pesach. And indeed, we start not eating it from the time of the Yisr Chametz, meaning Erev Pesach. From the time you can't eat bread, we don't eat matzah ashira because there is a cheshash. What is the cheshash? It's really a chumrah. The chumrah is that perhaps when you mix fruit juice or egg yolk with the flour, maybe that causes chametz to happen faster, meaning normally chametz takes 18 minutes and you bake it before 18 minutes, but maybe if you add some other stuff, the chimutz is accelerated. And l'chumra, therefore, we do not eat egg matzah during Pesach, but because it's only a chumra, the chumra does have certain leniencies, although the leniencies are inconsistent. Number one, you're allowed to own it, even though you can't eat it, so there's no isser of owning it. And number two, you're allowed to give it to a katan or a chole, a person that has difficulty chewing, or a zokein. So it's not really, we're not treating it like real chametz. But l'chumra, unless you're a chole or a zokein, the minhag of Ashkenazim is not to have egg matzah, not to eat, rather, egg matzah on Pesach. So again, for Sfardim, it is only a problem of Leil Seder. For Ashkenazim, we treat it in a limited way as chametz, except for a chol or a zaken. So it's very, very interesting. Again, I'm going to have to finish the main point next week to be mamshah, but I just want to mention that when the old matzah companies, many of which are not in business anymore, Horowitz Margaretin, Manischewitz, I don't even know if Manischewitz is still in business. I don't know the American brands anymore. But when they would make egg matzah, and the hashkachas would insist that they put, this is only mutter for a choler or zakein, they didn't want to put that on the package. That's like the cigarette package that says, don't smoke or you'll get cancer. You know, it kind of dissuades people from buying. So they would put things in Hebrew. They would say, ayin, in Hebrew words, ayin ramah simen, Tuf Ayin Aleph. Now, if I'm a consumer and I'm not a Talmud Chacham, and I see a bunch of Hebrew letters on a package of matzah, I just assume it's rabbinic supervision. But what those letters actually say is, don't eat this product. So they actually put in obscure Hebrew reference. By the way, you shouldn't eat this product. So Streitz, which was the last matzah company that closed, but Streitz was under the hashgacha of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, and he insisted that they be open and above board, and they had to print in English, this product should only be consumed by the elderly, by the ill, or by children. He was the one who opted for full disclosure. And again, I'm going to continue next week because there's an interesting relationship between the Vilna Gaon's Din of Mitzvah Kiyumis and Matzah Ashira. We will discuss it next week.